So the last few weeks, we've been exploring the topic of dependent origination, which is basically the Buddha's teaching that describes how our minds get tangled in suffering. And so we've gone through the links, and today I want to step back and look at the bigger picture a little bit again. So not going to go so much into the links today, but just, you know, kind of point to some of the core understandings of the some of the things that we can learn from this teaching. It's a teaching about conditionality. That there are conditions that lead to this tangle of suffering. And they're not random. They are lawful conditions. Those conditions, the way we think about the conditions often is like what's happening internally in our own mind, and how does what's happening internally in our own mind kind of contribute to that tangling. And that's actually one of the fundamental good news bits about this teaching, that there are things going on in our own minds personally that contribute to that tangle, and that there are choices, there are different conditions that our system can engage with different, as soon as we bring the exploration of what is the experience that's happening now, we are bringing new conditions to this pattern. Because essentially this pattern of the tangle in conditioning unfolds because of the habits and patterns of conditions that have been shaped by years of history, generations of history. And there's a way that the teaching of dependent origination does, at least in my read of the teaching, it does point to there's one exploration of or one link. The or two together, actually, the first two, ignorance conditions mental formations. And the basic definition of ignorance is not understanding suffering, not understanding how suffering comes to be, not understanding the way that we are habitually engaged in the world, wanting to get something, thinking that happiness will come from getting something that we want. It's another way to look at the not understanding suffering is that we don't understand happiness. We have misunderstandings about happiness and how to go about achieving it, how to go about finding happiness. And the misunderstandings tend to be the short-sighted nature of our own minds, that, you know, we think, if I get this thing, you know, if I get this thing, we do experience a moment of happiness when we get something that we want. We do experience a moment of like, oh, got it, figured it out. Oh, I can control my experience. I can do what I want to do. And so we do get a moment of happiness there, a little fleeting moment of happiness, and you know the misunderstanding about happiness basically. Is that kind of happiness, the getting something that I want, is as good as it gets in the world. That getting something that I want, even if we know kind of somewhere in our minds that it's just temporary happiness, we are our training, what we've learned through our conditioning is that, well, that's as good as it gets. So that's what we do in life. We keep trying to get more of what we want. We try to get rid of what we don't want. And so this ignorance that shapes our decisions, our actions, and that's mental formations, the next link in the chain, The ignorance and our habits and patterns, another way to look at those mental formations. They are, they're not just like shaped by our own minds and our own choices. They're shaped by what we learn from our families, our parents, our cultures, what we learn from media. We are shaped by our environment. And this is understood in the teachings of the Buddha. There's a lot of exploration around how we affect each other, and an encouragement to affect each other in skillful ways instead of unskillful ways. And so we are not independent of the kind of conditions of the larger world. And yet the teaching of dependent origination is there's some that one of the good news bits of the description that there is, yes, there's all these conditions from the past, all these conditions from culture and history and family that have shaped us. And yet the possibility of freedom, the possibility of being at ease, having a sense of peace is a good word. Having a sense of peaceful heart, a heart that is not constricted, a heart that's not fighting with experience, a heart that's aligned with the nature of what's happening in reality. The teaching the teachings of the Buddha point to that's possible for each of us, whether or not the rest of the world has an understanding into ignorance. So, the one of the ways to look at this teaching, it's ahead of the chain, that the very first thing that is pointed to in terms of when this is arising, it kind of sets up the whole set of suffering to follow. Is that when we don't understand suffering, when we have this misunderstanding about happiness, suffering follows. And as I said, that misunderstanding, some of it comes with our human system, but a lot of it also comes from how our culture teaches us to engage. And so the good news is we don't have to change the world in order to understand this misunderstanding within our own experience. There can be an ease of heart independent of the conditions in the world. Now, hearing that, even as I was reflecting on saying that earlier today, especially with, what's happening in this country this week, these mass shootings, it's like, how can it be possible to, I mean, it just sounds wrong in our minds to say we can be at ease while that's going on in the world. But I think that the wrongness of that, the feeling that that's wrong, comes from a misunderstanding of what that ease is. It's a misunderstanding, again, about what happiness is. We have the idea that our understanding of what ease is and what happiness is kind of influenced by greed and aversion. It's like the idea of being okay, having a sense of ease or peace in the heart when there's something as painful going on in the world. And there's always something painful going on in the world, but it's just like in our face right now, kind of in our face. The idea that it's wrong to have an ease of heart is a misunderstanding of what that ease of heart is. You know, really, that ease of heart is a heart that is open to fully feeling what's happening in the world without anger, hatred, without greed, without holding on. It's a heart that fully feels both the joys and the sufferings of the world. And so the freedom, maybe that's part of the misunderstanding. We think that what being at ease means is that we're not experiencing the pain of the world. But it means the opposite. That we experience the pain of the world, but without constriction. That's what's released in the heart with the with the kind of the shift of understanding around what happiness is, an understanding around suffering. The suffering is the clinging, the suffering is that constriction, and the constriction can release the resistance to the world as it is, can release. And then we actually feel the world. And so the heart that releases this ignorance, releases this misunderstanding about what happiness is, releases this misunderstanding about how suffering works. That heart is not in conflict with the nature of things as they're unfolding. And in an interesting result of that, I think another misunderstanding is that we have about that ease of heart or the ease of mind is that, well, if I feel like everything's okay, then why would I do anything? You know, why would I, you know, and that's partly, I think, too, where it feels wrong to have ease of, to think of having ease of heart when something so painful is happening in the world. Because of the idea we have about what that ease would mean. It'd mean I'd be like, oh yeah, everything's good, everything's cool, no problem. But that's not what that ease of heart is. That ease of heart, seeing the pain and suffering in the world, that heart that is not constricted, that heart feels that suffering. And the movement of heart there is compassion. It wants to act. It wants to do something to alleviate that suffering. And that's another kind of misunderstanding, I think, that around what this freedom is, that we're so used to, we're so familiar with what it means to act or engage when we don't like something. Or when we want to get something. And so, you know, the movement to act so often comes from these movements of greed and aversion and delusion that and they've convinced us the delusion within those mind states, you know, it's like greed. When greed is present, greed is telling us you need me in order to do something. When aversion is present, it's telling me, yeah, you're not going to act unless I'm here. And so those states of mind cannot fathom an action that comes without them. They have a kind of a myopic view of where action comes from. And so there's a little bit of trust for us to kind of take a leap of faith that as we explore what it means to let go of those qualities, those states, the craving, the clinging that are mentioned in dependent origination, the mental formations that come out of a misunderstanding of what happiness is, all of that. It's so hard to fathom what life would be like without it, and we envision it being something that it's not. We envision it just being kind of like, oh yeah, everything's chill, no, nothing to do. But instead, the experience is one of like, there's so much to do. But the movement to action is coming from a completely different place. The heart that is not constricted will want to act to alleviate suffering. And in a situation like the shootings this week, sometimes we might also feel like is compassion enough? You know, it's like sitting here in California, you know, what can I do? But the movement of compassion, it can have many different expressions. Very individual expressions, kind of depending on your own person, you know, your own talents, your own skills, what inspires you. The expression of compassion can look very different for different people. And so allowing that compassion to flower also means allowing your own unique expression of that compassion to flower. And not judging it, not thinking it should look like a certain thing. It'll look so different depending on who we are. And the expression of compassion, too, just having a few moments of compassion in your heart has an effect on our environment. Just as the teaching of dependent origination teaches us how we influence each other with negativity and ignorance, when compassion is arising and expressed, even in small ways. Maybe it's as simple as, you know, being kind to the person in the grocery store. I mean, I don't see very many people these days. You know, it's like I see all of you on the screen. But you know, just maybe it's a small thing. Maybe it's a you know, it's a you know, the crinkle in your eyes because I can't see our smiles anymore behind our masks, but just a connection, an eye contact, and a tone of voice that can have an effect on somebody. And so compassion is contagious, just as anger and aversion are contagious. And so not underestimating the beauty of really just touching into that possibility for us. So those are some random reflections. I don't know, random, but kind of inspired by the teaching of dependent origination, but also just what I've been thinking about this week. So any comments or reflections from you? You're welcome to just unmute if you have something you'd like to share.
Thank you for the teaching. There's some part of being an idealist, which wants to reorder the world to some just place. And I've been there, and I've tried to do it with will, and probably not from a very calm, methodical, compassionate place. And when you do that, you just get burnt out. That's what I've learned from experience.
It's true. But sometimes I'll say, sometimes compassion doesn't necessarily feel calm, methodical.
Yeah.
It can have some energy to it.
Yeah.
So you know, that's another potentially idea that we have about what it would look like, you know, to engage from that place of compassion, because it can have some energy to it, I think. Yeah, but it's so easy to get burned out, you know, with the idea of, you know, needing or needing to have things change, often from, you know, some of it comes from compassion. That's an important point. So that movement to want to have the justice, there is some compassion in there, right? There's some wishing that people not suffer. And yet the trying, there's also probably some aversion in there. And so, you know, to see, you know, part of what we can do is to begin to be curious about, can we connect with the compassion side of it? You know, even as the aversion is there, you know, and take some act, if we are going to take some action, seeing if it can be from that movement of the wishing for the alleviation of suffering, as opposed to the anger to the people perpetuating the suffering. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's a work in progress. Definitely a work in progress.
When I walked to the library today, I noticed that there was this sign which said, "No justice, and then only no peace," or something along the lines. It's just a banner. But it made me reflect that it's a lot easier if you know peace first and then fight for justice.
Yes.
A lot more easier, a lot more effective sometimes.
I think it's more effective, because I think when we are fighting from the perspective of the anger, we're creating conditions that will end up perpetuating anger, even if a particular situation changes.
Yeah.
You know, even if there's something that shifts, the thing, the goal that we have, you know, the idea of this has to change. You know, if we're coming at it from the perspective of the anger, there's a perpetuation in the whole process. It'll go underground for a little while, but it'll pop up again. So I think, you know, but we can't wait until we're completely free of aversion and greed before we act. You know, so that's another piece that we do have to act and be aware, you know, when we are motivated by greed and aversion, and also know that there is often that compassion in there. See, we can land a little more on the side of the compassion for the action. Yeah, doing the best we can.
Andrea,
yeah,
I'm just wondering, I understand, and absolutely it's true, and then many of the, you know, great leaders have done that. But where I am, I think for me, probably anger does have more fire under it to get things done than the compassion at this point. I'm hoping to get to more to the other side, but it seems that it does carry more fire, you know, in me to get things done than the compassion would.
And yeah, and I think that that was definitely the case for me too. And what helped to cure me of it, cure me of the wanting to act on that energy, was when I really started feeling the suffering in the moment of that anger energy. It became not worth it. The energy of getting things done, the feeling of the, because anger comes with, the hook for anger often is like at the very beginning, right as it comes in, there's this feeling of strength and power that comes with anger. Mm-hmm. And a feeling of potency, and that it's like, that feels really good, actually. I was shocked when I felt the initial arising of anger and felt how good it felt. It's like, that was the becoming, that was that moment of like, yep, I'm in charge, I'm in control. And very quickly though, as I watched it, very quickly, it turned painful. And so the cure essentially is to really be curious about what the experience, the direct in the moment experience of that anger is. Yes, it comes with that potency and that energy. It's not the only movement that can create that potency and that energy. Compassion can create that potency and that energy. But the way that we'll kind of wean ourselves from the anger as the source of that is to recognize how painful the anger is. So keep exploring the experience when there is the anger. Explore what that's like. It was like such an eye opener for me to really feel into the pain of that. It's like, wow, and why does the mind keep doing this? it's so painful. And then at some point I saw that moment, that split second of the power and that energy and that age. It's like, oh, this is why it keeps doing it. This is why it's hooked to it, because of that split second of that feeling of power that feels good. But it's not worth it. And we can learn that by looking at our experience. We can learn.